Hi everyone, it's Gail. Today I am very excited to pass the mic to Laura Hughes for this special episode of She Explores. You'll probably recognize Laura's voice. Laura is the wonderful host of our sister show, Women on the Road, and she's also an ambassador for Sherpa Adventure Gear, who we're creating this episode with. I know you'll be in good hands for this one as Laura interviews Wasfia Nazreen, a Bangladeshi mountaineer, activist, social worker, and writer. Sherpa recently brought on Wasfia to their ambassador team because, as you'll hear, she is a highly driven woman in the outdoors and has some unique ties to both the brand as well as Nepal. I hope you'll enjoy. Okay, on with the show.
This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Sherpa Adventure Gear. Founded in 2003 by Tashi Sherpa and his family to help the communities and people of Nepal, Sherpa Adventure Gear seeks to honor legendary high-altitude climbers by creating reliable adventure gear you can take with you anywhere. Sherpa is made for the adventurous, for people with open minds, big hearts, and a desire to explore. And as you'll hear in this special episode, they're all about giving back, too. In short, Sherpa is a small brand committed to making a big impact. Stay tuned for later in this episode when we hear from Wasfia Nazreen, mountaineer and activist, about what she loves most about Sherpa's mission and products. To learn more, visit SherpaAdventureGear.com.
Almost like I was saying, it was a spiritual practice for me to reflect deeper into the inner mountains and addressing the inner mountains while I was on the physical journey.
I'm Laura Hughes, and you're listening to She Explores. I couldn't be more excited or honored to be able to introduce Wasfia Nazreen, whose voice you just heard at the start of this episode. As Gail mentioned, Wasfia is a mountaineer, activist, social worker, and writer, among other things. So as you'd imagine, when she's not climbing mountains, Wasfia has a really cool job.
My name is Wasfia Nazreen. I'm from Bangladesh, but live a lot in Nepal, so I'm between Bangladesh and Nepal. Right now I'm in LA. I am an explorer with National Geographic as well as just in life, and an adventurer with Nat Geo as well.
That's so cool. You have my dream job. Not that this isn't my dream job, but you definitely have my dream job. And I think a lot of women too, when they think about going out and seeing the world and traveling and exploring, National Geographic obviously comes to mind. And so that's really fantastic.
Thank you. It was my dream job when I was little. Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're getting to do it now. Did you ever think that that was going to be something that you got to do in life?
No, actually, you know, because in growing up in Bangladesh, I actually couldn't even afford to buy the magazines, you know, and in Bangladesh, you'd actually get them years later. So you'd get a five-year-old magazine in the library. And I would always stare at it growing up because, you know, you don't get to subscribe from Bangladesh, or I didn't at that time. Yeah, it was not even in my wildest imagination, no.
Back in November of 2015, Wasfia completed the Seven Summits, which is a climb of the highest mountain in each of the seven continents.
I had started it in 2011 because Bangladesh that year had turned 40 years old, and I wanted to do something on a global scale for a campaign to raise awareness on how far women in Bangladesh had achieved, you know, in the 40 years of our existence. So I went on to climb the highest mountains of every continent, which for Bangladesh was still a new thing at that time. So I did five of the seven summits back to back. The first one was Kilimanjaro, which is the highest mountain in Africa, in Tanzania, and then I went on to do Elbrus, which is the highest of Europe, in between Russia and Georgia. I mean, I kept climbing other mountains in between, but out of the seven, the next one was Everest, which is, as everyone knows, between Tibet and Nepal, the highest of Asia and the world. Before that, I also did Aconcagua, which is the highest of South America, in between Chile and Argentina. And then I did Vincent Massif, which is the highest of Antarctica. Just going to Antarctica was a whole journey by itself. And then Denali, the highest of North America, which is in Alaska. I actually ended up having three different expeditions to reach to the top. That's a totally different story. But the last one was, I guess, the hardest to get to because of its location. It's called Karstens Pyramid, which is the highest of Australasia or Oceania. It's in West Papua, but it's a very complicated territory, especially for Bangladeshis to go to. I ended up figuring out logistics to get there in like 3 years. But yeah, so all in all, it took me 4 years to finish because of Karsten's pyramid, because I just logistically, I couldn't even get there.
I didn't even consider the journey that it takes and the logistical planning. I mean, now that I'm saying it out loud, it makes sense that if you're going to be climbing all of these really tall mountains around the world, that there are going to be inherent barriers to that. And like you said, especially if you're from a country like Bangladesh, I just didn't even think about that. So that's really fascinating to hear that from your perspective, that there's some major pre-work before you even get to the start of this.
It takes like so many months of preparation, and then logistically it's just a nightmare. But, and I mentioned this because I have a Bangladeshi passport, and getting to most of these locations, for example, in South America, we didn't even have any diplomatic ties with the countries that had the mountain. So getting to the country was harder than actually climbing the mountain.
When Mosfia finished all of the seven summits, she did so as the first person from Bangladesh to do so. And as a woman, this carried some additional weight. I asked her how it felt to complete it.
I didn't actually set out to become the first, but by default, I became the first. So when I first launched the campaign, I thought it was for a bigger purpose, but automatically, I guess it pissed off a very small portion of society, because they wanted a man to go and become the first person. And I've seen mountaineers from all across the globe, but these are things that only in a South Asian country you can imagine, the things that you deal with in between climbing and after climbing down the mountain. So there were times when I've received death threats, harassment, just complete defamation about my character, things like, you know, sponsored ads on social media about made up stories about me, you know. So all these were happening while I was climbing the seven summits. And even after I came back down, many from that group tried to prove that I actually didn't even reach the summit. But I think it made me stronger in the longer run, and keeping focus on the summit and on the journey during all this was going on, because I also come, you know, I have an activist background and I'm a single woman functioning in a society that doesn't necessarily support a lot of the activities that I do. So those threats were real. And living in Bangladesh, you have to be very careful. So staying focused during that time was probably the most difficult thing I had to practice. But it made the actual climbing part much easier, I must say.
Yeah, by comparison, I was actually going to ask you if some of those voices and that negativity was at all fuel for you in being able to reach some of those summits.
Now that I have had a couple of years to look back at the seven summits, I see it all now. But during the time of climbing and the campaign going on, I tried everything to shut those voices off. I wouldn't go on social media. I had teams like looking after that, because, you know, once you go on their level, I didn't have the energy to compete with that, you know. And every time I would read something, it was just funny that people would make up things like that. And whenever I would hit a rock bottom on the actual journey, I thought of why I was doing it, because I've been on mountains many times when I'm not doing it for a national or social cause or a campaign. And because I did it for the women of Bangladesh, it gave me more energy when I faced an obstacle, because I reminded myself of why I was really doing it. And that took me to the next level. It gave me more strength.
I totally hear that. And did you also find a lot of, I guess, especially women coming to you and saying, this has been really inspiring to me that you're on this journey to do these summits, like what you're doing has really impacted me, especially women from Bangladesh. Did you have that experience?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's not just women. I've had fathers from, you know, the remotest part of Bangladesh, from the north, come all the way to the capital city through like crazy train journeys and bus journeys, and bringing their daughters, his daughter, and saying, I want my daughters to go into your foundation. And I think that's the kind of shift in patriarchal thinking, that's my biggest achievement, is having a little bit of a dent in that patriarchal shift. Because before, they would think that women can't do certain things. And now it's like, if a woman from our country could be the first person to climb all the seven summits, then any girl can do whatever they want. So overwhelmingly, yeah, there's been like a lot of support from women as well as men.
It's interesting how, I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, and I think I hear people talk about this, that it's easy to really remember the negative things that somebody says about you, but sometimes it takes a lot more compliments or a lot more positives, right, to overcome some of those, the naysayers or people who are not happy with what you're doing. But I really liked hearing you talk about that, that if you keep your eye on the bigger picture, that it's easy to move forward.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, it's a country of 170 million people. So there's a whole diverse range of emotions. But the attacks are like probably 5% to all the love and support I got. But just as a single woman in my society, I think it feels humongous, the amount of struggle I had to overcome. But if I didn't have the support of the greater mass, I wouldn't be able to be here today.
Definitely. What does it feel like to stand at the top of the summit of a really large mountain?
First of all, to get to the top, you go through so many different experiences, right? And it really depends which part of life you're in, because once you're in higher altitude, I personally feel 90% of it is in the mind. Because I've seen a lot of athletes, for example, you know, like world-class athletes go to higher altitude and not be able to deal with it. And just because I have been able to go into bigger mountains doesn't mean I can always be able to deal with high altitude. Reason for me to say that the mountains in that are like above 6,000 meters, just being on the mountain itself is so overwhelming, and it's so spiritual. I don't want to sound like, you know, I know it's a cliche, but it is a very spiritual journey for me. And it's like the, you know, deepest meditation you can do, I feel, you know, going back into these big mountains. Every summit is totally different experience and feelings. For example, let's say Everest. It can't get higher than that. And it was a very difficult mountain because the traffic that year was crazy. We can talk about the traffic like for the rest of the night, so I'm just going to focus on the summit for now. I had my last camp destroyed by an avalanche right before summit push. And for those who don't know, it's like, you know, you prep for months or weeks to get to the summit, and then the summit window opens for only very few nights. So as we're getting ready for this final summit push, my last camp before the summit got destroyed and I got luckily saved. Anyway, long story short, we had to go all the way back to base camp and bring all our supplies back just between me and Nima, who was my climbing partner at that time, Nima Girman Sherpa. And we technically so climbed Everest 3 times during that 1 month slot. And I crossed like 7 dead bodies on the way to the summit just from last camp. And 5 of those people were people I knew on the mountain, you know, all this emotional stuff. But actually, when I reached the summit, the sun was coming up. And for the first time, I got to see myself on the actual location. And I was on this really sharp ridge line where you can actually choose which country you want to die in. If you fall on the right, you die in Tibet. If you fall on the left, you die in Nepal. So you're basically on the main ridge line that separates those two countries. And that line kind of goes straight on the summit. So one side is Tibet, the other side is Nepal. And then the sun was coming from the Tibet side on my right. And you know when you're flying in an airplane and you see the curvature of Earth from the window, it's kind of like that, and the sun is coming out from the curvature. And just remember feeling like this overwhelming feeling of gratitude, you know, just seeing myself as a dot in the entire expanse of everything that around Everest is all the highest mountains in the world. And I just remember that experience of being on top of the world, I cannot compare with any other mountaintop experience, because I remember the mountain that I climbed after that, I was like, I reached the summit, I was like, man, this is a little short. I just wanted to go back to, you know, the high altitude feeling that you get in your brain. But then you get used to the actual experience of, you know, being on the adventure itself, and the journey is as important as the summit itself, right? So if not more, because you learn so much in that journey.
We'll be back to hear more from Wasfia after this. Sherpa Adventure Gear is made for the adventurous, for people with open minds, big hearts, and a desire to explore. But it's not just about summiting mountains with Sherpa. They're also committed to helping the communities and people of Nepal through employment and education opportunities. So when you purchase a piece of gear from Sherpa Adventure Gear, you'll know it's also supporting a company who's honestly dedicated to making a lasting positive impact in the lives of others. You've been hearing from Wasfia Nazreen in this episode about her experiences on the mountains. As an ambassador for Sherpa Adventure Gear, she's had the opportunity to test out a wide variety of their product, and she can attest that Sherpa Adventure Gear not only creates pieces that are reliable in any condition, but have a versatility and style that can truly go with you anywhere.
I've been literally sleeping, going to the gym, doing everything in my Moksha performance tees. They're the most comfortable. They don't smell at all, even if you have had no shower. So they're great for hiking. They're great for just everyday living in gym or, you know, they're also SPF 50, I think. So they're great under the sun. Yeah, I just, when I wear them, I just forget to take them off. And I also love, I've been wearing this recently, the, you know, the Yangzum water resistant jackets. Temperature wise, it's just, they're easily adjusted. And, you know, I run cold very easily, but also I don't like too much warmth. And it's perfect because, you know, living by the ocean is super cold in the morning. So you start out the day like all freezed up, and then you're on the top of the hill within an hour, and then you start sweating, and then the sun's up. So it's like that jacket is really cool to, you know, shield you across the whole array of temperatures no matter where you're at.
Whether you're staying close to home or literally climbing a mountain this winter, let Sherpa Adventure Gear help you get there and feel good about supporting real people in the process. Learn more at sherpaadventuregear.com. That's SherpaAdventureGear.com. We're back with Wasfia. And something she thinks on often as she climbs mountains are also the internal ones she has to overcome. If we're being honest, these internal mountains are something we all carry, and they look different for everybody. Some days they feel tall and intimidating, and other days we see a clear path emerge. Sometimes they're older than we are. And other times we feel as if we've just come upon them, or understanding their magnitude for the first time as the clouds begin to part. But either way, we have to put in the personal work to get to the summit. Wasfia shares a bit about hers.
Almost all mountaineers probably, you know, have to deal with this. I had a very traumatic childhood and adolescence, and I remember with the mountains I climbed in my early 20s, not just mountains, just being out in nature. I, for one, found most of my healing that way. And so for me, climbing became almost, like I was saying, it was a spiritual practice for me to reflect deeper into the inner mountains and addressing the inner mountains while I was on the physical journey of climbing the outer mountains. And when I first started doing like high altitude treks and 6,000 meter peaks, I found so much of my healing that way. And also a lot of stuff comes up in higher altitude. I also, you know, I'm a practicing meditator formally, and it's kind of like the process that we go through on the cushion when we're actually meditating with a teacher or in some retreat. So I've always found it very interesting how all that works out in expeditions.
Absolutely. In terms of your path to becoming a mountaineer and to climb bigger and bigger peaks, what was that like for you? How did you get started in climbing?
So in my early 20s, I was based in the Himalayas for work. I was working on several projects, but basically I was posted with Tibetan refugees who are still scattered all around the Himalayas. So for work, I would have to go a lot between Nepal, Bhutan, Indian Himalayas, and I was based in Dharamsala for a long time where the Dalai Lama is based. And so for work, I just happened to have a whole office full of mountaineers. Back then, you didn't have much activities over the weekend. So with my colleagues, I just started climbing these 5,000, 6,000 meter peaks after, you know, being based there and going on shorter trips and things like that. And then after years, my friends told me that, so those who don't know, Sherpa people who are in Nepal mostly, they're originally actually from Tibet. Sherpa means coming from the east. So they're actually from the east of Tibet. Their culture, religion, language, everything is very similar to Tibetan. So if you speak Tibetan, you got both ways. So because I worked with their spiritual guru and I was in the movement with them I have been very privileged and I got to learn directly from mostly Sherpa and Tibetan people. I've actually never been to a mountaineering school formally, which I know many people do. And so I got very lucky because of my work that way, and also because a lot of the big legendary mountaineers actually come to His Holiness Dalai Lama for blessings. So I befriended a number of these big time mountaineers while I was working. And many years later, when I actually started doing the Seven Summits, it was Patrick Morrow, who is the first person in the world to have finished the Seven Summits, who invited me and he and his wife to Canada to train with them. And he prepped me for the Seven Summits, which was a huge honor, you know, and just learning. Like, I remember still in my college days, I would read his book and put it under my pillow so that in dreams, you know, I could become something like him. But for him to just, you know, hear of a colleague who's doing the Seven Summits and then invite and then take me as his daughter and train was a very precious experience in my life. It started as a weekend thing, and then I just realized that at least for now I adapt to higher altitude quickly and easily, probably because I was based there for so long. So as long as I'm able, I would continue mountaineering.
That's amazing. I'm just curious because I don't know anything about acclimation to like really high altitudes. How long do you have? Like, what's your window of time? Like, how often do you have to be, you know, staying acclimatized essentially before you lose it?
Right. So it depends, of course, on the body types. But for, you know, seasoned climbers like us, for example, like when I go back to Everest base camp, the base camp is only like at 19,000 feet. Like if you go with the heli directly to base camp, you would definitely get altitude sickness. That's the height. But for some reason, like, I don't know if it's because I've lived there for so long, but every time I go back, because I take clients, you know, for the trek, and every time I go, I take the heli up to a certain height. And knock on woods, I haven't gotten sick yet. So I think it depends how seasoned you are. But for an average person, it's supposed to stay for 2 weeks. Like, say, for example, I've acclimatized now to, say, 19,000 feet. That 19,000 feet acclimatization would stay with me for another 2 weeks. And I do not recommend, like, because I see a lot of people taking pills like Diamox and other things on the mountains to keep that acclimatization. But I'm talking about like totally natural without any synthetic drugs or anything. I feel like altitude sickness is something that if you know the conditions that it comes out in, and if you just go slowly, it's very easy to stop it if you detect early. Most people get sick because they're trying to go too fast, and they're not paying attention to themselves, or their mind has been conditioned so, you know, hard to focus on the summit that they're not paying attention to what their body is saying. So whenever I'm taking groups, that's our basic principle. It's like we're always very transparent. We're always talking to each other about how we're feeling in higher altitude.
That makes sense. Yeah, communication is super important so that everyone can stay safe, and honesty too. And I guess a good dose of humility.
Oh, a big dose of humility.
I'm curious just to hear your thoughts on what it means to you to be a female climber, especially a female climber from Bangladesh.
I feel females are just inherently, we have more patience, which is number one in the mountains. That's why I think we're actually better in the mountains. If you have the physical ability to do all the hard work, I mean, mountaineer or not, I have always lived my life as early as I remember defying conventions. So I don't necessarily think of myself in Bangladesh, you know, as, you know, I'm from Bangladesh and I'm doing mountaineering. I never thought that. Even just in the world perspective, the ratio of female climbers or guides is so low that we still have a really long way to go. It just brings me a lot of joy to use this sport, or, you know, being a mountaineer, it inspires a lot of my country people. And I'm just very happy that I can, you know, provide that through my journeys.
Waspia recently joined Sherpa Adventure Gear as an ambassador. And as someone who lives with a lot of intention and conviction, I wanted to know more about what made her decide to partner up with Sherpa. It turns out there's more than one really, really good reason.
Sherpa and I go back many years because one of my, so remember who I mentioned for climbing Everest, Nima German Sherpa. He was like my big brother, best friend, climbing partner, teacher, and he passed in a very tragic motorbike accident back in December 2012. And since then, you know, I have kind of been taking care of his daughters, but Sherpa Adventure Gear has fund for education where, you know, Nima's daughter, Pasang Sherpa, it has been studying for the last 7 years. So, you know, I love that this brand, which was, I guess, founded back in 2003 by one of our friends, Tashi Sherpa, has, you know, started from such humble background in Nepal and then went global, and it was a living memorial to the unsung heroes of Everest. And that kind of aligns with the work that I was already doing back way before that, because I started out as an activist for high altitude workers. And so every single part of their brand statement flows with my passion and my vision. Not to forget how much they employ in Nepal, and the fact that they're educating, and you know, for every single gear that they sell, a certain percentage is going to the education fund.
The Sherpa Adventure Gear Fund has made a lasting impact in the life of Wasfia, her niece, and her family as a whole, as well as the 9 other children annually who receive tuition from school, as well as funds for lodging and healthy extracurricular activities. In my opinion, it's not something enough people know about when it comes to Sherpa adventure gear, but it's a big reason they have support from ambassadors like Wasfia and myself. One other thing Wasfia didn't mention directly that she has in common with Sherpa adventure gear is her passion around uplifting youth locally, which is why she started the Ulso Foundation to do just that.
You know, as I was doing the Seven Summits, it obviously generated a lot of audience and support from not just my country, but around all over South Asia and the world. At that time, I wanted to create something that would continue to inspire the adolescent girls, especially at home, because I myself personally have benefited a lot for, you know, education during that time. It was education that gave me a way to my future, and I wanted to somehow not just show to society, but also provide a resource for girls, not just to get education from schools, like the traditional school system, but also outdoors. So also foundation was birthing at that time, but it didn't start the actual operation till I finished the Seven Summits, which was back in 2015. So early 2016 we launched, and the idea is to take adolescent girls and now older women to take them outdoors and help them empower themselves to climb their inner mountains through different courses that we're providing. And it's kind of based out of my journals from the Seven Summits, and then we worked with several of Outward Bound, several of their former instructors provided me with a lot of the curriculum stuff, so we combined those, and then now it's kind of a South Asian version of Outward Bound plus Mindfulness School. And this year we open it up to men because I think young men needs to be part of the dialogue, and we can't really just empower half of the society and have the men figure it out. So yeah, we'll see where this year goes, and then there's a lot of mentorship that I provide personally. But this year we're kind of shifting and trying out with several schools to see if a younger crowd could take over as being the mentors. So a lot is still under transformation, and our idea for the next 5 to 10 years is to kind of have a coalition all over South Asia, because I think girls in general in South Asia go through similar issues, and the mountains that we climb are very similar. And nothing women's focused is in the region that we know of, so it would be great to have, you know, that kind of partnership grow in the region.
I'm picking up a theme from our conversation that I'm not really too surprised by, but you're really one for starting big, audacious, beautiful things where nothing has existed before. Some like actual true trailblazing in a lot of different senses, and I just really admire that a lot.
Oh, thank you. It's a pretty uphill climb, though.
What do you do to take care of yourself so that you have the energy and capacity to take on all of these really big inner and outer summits?
Well, you know, self-care is not really a thing in our culture, in my culture. I come from a family where even now my aunts are the last person to eat. You know, they serve everyone and then they eat. So everyone from my mom's generation has been married off when they were in their teenage years. I have aunts who's been married off when they were 13. So I learned very late and I'm still learning. And honestly, after I moved to LA, I'm trying to take care of myself because, you know, even taking an hour off to meditate or, you know, just doing your thing, whether it's yoga or reading books and not actually working for the world, that gives me so much more energy. So just for the past a year or two, I would say that I'm learning to take care of myself because I had reached a rock bottom mentally and just spiritually just being drained. And I've had to learn, I guess, the hard way that if we don't take care of ourselves, we can't take care of others. So it's more important to take care of others, of course, but we have to take care of ourselves in order to serve.
Right. It's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, that you did hit a really, really rock bottom low point and needed to take care of yourself, because it just reminded me the way you also talked about altitude acclimation, that if you are starting to get altitude sickness and you catch it early, it's much easier to correct and heal yourself than if you let it go too far and go too fast or don't listen to your body. And so I feel like the self-care definitely falls into the same philosophy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's interesting.
WASPI has some incredible plans coming up for 2020 and beyond. One of them bringing it back to the reason she's currently based in Los Angeles.
In the last 4 years that, you know, I've had the greatest privilege of being in all seven continents, and I'm very close to the mountaineering, I guess, the industry and the, you know, the community all in all different parts of the world. And what I noticed was there was a whole lack of representation. And oftentimes the TV shows are told by white males. And while that's okay, but I think the narrative shifts a lot and our stories can be told better by ourselves. So it's a show that lets the women tell their own stories and how they're using exploration to uplift humanity. And yeah, so I've been working on that and I can't wait for production to start, which is coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, well, you know that we're all about having women tell their own stories here, so you're in front of the right audience for that.
And we have to put our foot down. We have to tell our own stories. You know, if we don't do it, no one else will.
To wrap things up, Wasfia has some words to offer anyone out there who might be facing their own internal mountains.
I had to learn, like, again, the hard way, but I wish someone groomed me with this. But it's like no matter what we do, whether we're mountaineers or whatever, you know, especially as women, someone or the other would have a problem with it. So I think for ourselves to live our own life, it's very important that we have a purpose in life, and we are clear with our intention or our motivation on why we want to get there, why we want to do it. And if we're honest and hardworking with that goal, there is no one who can stop us, even if they put all their foots together. You have to really stay focused on your dream, and life is too short. So I would just encourage everyone to not live anyone else's lives, live your own.
Thanks so much to Wasfia Nazreen for her time and to Sherpa Adventure Gear for helping to make this conversation happen. If you want to find out more about Wasfia, you can find her at WasfiaNazreen on Instagram. We'll be posting links to that, as well as her website and her foundation's website, plus some other resources in our show notes, so make sure to go check that out too. Gail will be back in your podcast feed next week with another episode of She Explores. But in the meantime, make sure to find us on social media. You can connect with us on Instagram at @she_explores, on Twitter, and on our podcast Facebook group. Music is by Kai Engel and Lee Rosevere. This episode of She Explores was produced by me with support from Gail Straub. Until next time, see you on the trails.